AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. One quick note before we get to Jack Rice here. I want to say this. It brings up more questions on Kim Potter shooting Dante Wright. Once again, when I looked at the Glock 17 that they had there and I was looking at the safety features, the safety's on the trigger. I didn't see an additional button you had to switch. But if that is the case, then once again, how in the world did you pull that weapon, flip off the safety, and then pull the trigger if you didn't intend to do that? Because that's not what you do with a taser. And so, I mean, that actually brings up, if there is a switch, I did not see it, and I look back on the image I see, the safety is on the trigger, which is insanity. So that's something that if there is an additional switch on that Glock, then how in the world did you switch off the safety, then pull the trigger? Because that doesn't make any sense then why Dante Wright is currently dead. 952-946-6205. Jack Rice, jackricelaw.com, jackricelaw.com. He's been a very busy man this week. Jack, I really do appreciate the time. I know how busy you are. Thank you very much, sir.
Are you kidding me? If I have the time, man, you're my guy. You know that.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. So we had a busy week here. They wrapped up the prosecution's presentation. The defense took the stage, and they wrapped up their presentation. What did you think about the defense presentation after all we saw from the prosecution?
Well, you know, I mean, the difficult part in a case like this, Matt, is that the prosecution did a heck of a job. I mean, they just did. They had really sharp people. You think about that doc out of Chicago.
Yes.
You think about some of the use of force people, and you look at how effective they were. As you and I have discussed, a big part of this was a combination of not just the issue of bringing in this technical evidence that's really powerful intellectually. You bring in this visceral evidence from his girlfriend, from his younger brother, from eyewitnesses. I mean, it's just ripping at your heartstrings. You combine those two, and it is absolutely devastating testimony. So for the defense, the real question becomes, what do you do? Now, if you think about what they did, this is the struggle. And trust me, as a trial lawyer, this is something I'm constantly having to deal with. It's the question of how much do you present to a jury versus making sure that the jury focuses in on what the prosecution has done. Because remember, the burden is on the state in this case. What they decided to do was to bring in this use of force expert. And they bring in this doc, and basically these are two experts of their own with a bunch of long letters after their names. And the argument to the jury is, look, these seem like reasonable people. These reasonable people seem to disagree. If it's a tie, the defense wins. That actually is the argument.
But, okay, and Fowler was the medical guy. I can't remember the crime scene guy, but the procedure guy. But the Fowler was the medical guy. The dismantling of Fowler by the prosecution on cross was unbelievable. I mean, and like I said, yeah, you're right. The defense allowed him to put out a lot of ifs and whats and stuff. But the systematic dismantling of his credentials, his arguments by the prosecution, in my mind, negated both of those experts.
No, there is no question. And see, that really is the exposure question. When you start putting on somebody that's dubious, somebody who doesn't necessarily have the expertise that you want and need them to have, what it actually has the potential of doing is undercutting all of your credibility that you may have been able to gain when you're cross-examining the prosecution witnesses. And then, of course, there is the bottom line piece. And that's the question of whether or not you ever put on your own client. There is always that question. There is always a wonder about whether or not you're supposed to. Because, you know, there is this presumption of innocence, this idea that they have already said, I did not do it. And so putting them on also exposes them to cross-examination. Sometimes it's because they don't speak particularly well and they might hurt themselves, not because they're guilty, but simply because they're not terribly articulate. Other times it's because they're guilty and you don't want them to say anything stupid. So, because the burden is always on the state. So the bottom line becomes that. But I should say this, I would never put on a client ever, 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 if I thought they were going to lie. And I tell every single client I've ever had this point is that if you're going to take the stand, I am not going to put you on the stand if you're going to go up there and say something that I don't believe to be true. And so that's a part of it.
And I mean, let's face it, in the case of Derek Chauvin, if he would have taken the stand, he would have been destroyed by the prosecution. I mean, they're really, yeah. it would have been a nightmarish decision by the defense to put him on the stand.
Well, you know, and you're right. And here's the thing is again, as I consider these issues, if I have a client who has basically a clean background, that's a good reason. Chauvin, relatively speaking, the problem is he has a whole bunch of police misconduct questions. And all those have the potential of coming up if he comes out and says, I'm this great guy, and they can now bring in all the things that show that he's not. That's a big part of it. But in his case in particular, the problem that you have is you get to put on this tape. You get to bring on all of these people, and you get to go through it with a microscope with him, literally frame by frame by frame. It's like, okay, now we're at 1 minute and 37 seconds. You're thinking this right now. Now you're at 1 minute and 42 seconds. I mean, it would be absolutely brutal.
Jack, with your legal expertise, as you watch this and read about this over the last week, if you are to give, let's take the devil's advocate side of this, if you are to give the defense their best option here of what you heard to get a not guilty, what did they present, do you feel could end up getting them a not guilty verdict?
Well, this is where I would be right now. If you look at this case and what came out from the prosecution, from the defense, during cross, all of it, I think the focus right now is going to have to be on, and this sounds crazy, this idea needs to be on proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That is the standard. What that means in a courtroom is not a capricious doubt, not any inconceivable doubt, but it's doubt that you use in your most important affairs. So what that means is, like, if you're deciding whether you're going to put your parents in a nursing home, how careful will you be when you make that decision? When you think about every piece, if you have a question, any question about this case, that question leads to a doubt, a reasonable doubt. And if you can find any room as to why it is that this could have happened any other way and you're unhappy with some of the evidence or any piece of evidence that the prosecution presented, that is considered doubt. And I think they have to drive that home. They got to beat that drum from beginning to end. They have to. They have no other choice.
If you're the prosecution, your closing argument's just the 9.5 minute videotape, mainly, correct?
You know, I'm tempted, if I'm prosecuting this case, to walk up there with a big giant clock. They've seen the tape how many times? What do you think, Matt? Over and over and over again. They've seen it so many times. I would be tempted to walk up there with a big giant sort of analog sweeping finger clock and just put the clock on in front of them and turn it on and let it go 9 minutes and 29 seconds and just sit there with not a single word. Not a single word. And you just let those seconds slide by and just stare at them in dead silence. And, oh, boy, I don't know. I'm getting shivers thinking about how brutal that would be. If I'm on the defense side, I'm like, okay, I'll be under the table over here in the corner in a fetal position. Yeah. Please just ignore me.
You know, you have been very straightforward. Juries make the decision on this. We really can't say where this is going to go. But if you were to take a guess, and no one's going to hold this to you, if you are going to take a guess, do you think that the prosecution put forward enough evidence here to get guilty on second degree, third degree, and manslaughter?
I want to say the state certainly put together sufficient evidence to do that. You can see how much I'm equivocating now.
Yes.
thanks, brother. I would say they have presented sufficient evidence. At the same time, I think that jurors still want to believe that the cops are the good guys, even when they're not. And I think because of that, you could see a hung jury on the second degree count in particular. Mm-hmm. You might even see a hung jury on the third degree count. I think that he's going to go down on the manslaughter count.
What's the amount of time in jail for manslaughter?
Manslaughter presumptive 48-month commit. That means he would serve a third off for good time. Now, here's the deal. 48 months because of special circumstances. In this case, they could try to convince the judge, because he was a cop, he did what he did, to go for a double upward, which means 96 months. So he's looking at 8 years with a third off. So he dropped two. He'd do 6 in custody.
I would have a hard time. And I mean, I, once again, you are the expert. I'm just the observer here. I think that for sure they got the third degree on him.
No, I mean, look, they brought up a couple of things in particular during some of that witness testimony. And in particular, I'm thinking back to that cardiologist and the doctor who said, this is when the light goes out of his eyes.
Tobin,
this is when he dies, right there. And the thing is that to watch Chauvin continue, despite the fact that he's kneeling on a dead man, was so brutal that I think that's the third degree count. If they grab him, they grab him because Tobin literally picked up Chauvin and shook him like a rag doll.
And one final thing, reminder, if it's third degree murder, what's the jail's term on that?
Presumptive 150 month commit. It's as bad as the second degree is.
Okay.
So it's a very long time. And so if he goes down on the third degree, you could see that they could still go for an upward. But even 150 months is a long time regardless.
Jack, we will get closing arguments. I will definitely try to get in touch with you next week to see if you can come back, okay?
I'm whatever you need, my friend.
Thank you. JackRiceLaw.com. If you need a lawyer, best defense lawyer in town, period, is Jack Rice. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.